Hi, this is Perry, and you're listening to the Chemist Corner Podcast for Monday, June 28th, 2010. Welcome to Chemist Corner. I'm your host, Perry Romanowski, cosmetic chemist and world record-holding joggler. Chemist Corner is a podcast about cosmetic science and is broadcast to help educate, entertain, and inspire current and future cosmetic scientists. The information and opinions discussed on Chemist Corner are those of the hosts and the guests alone. They do not necessarily reflect those of any past, present, or future employers. We have a big show today, including cosmetic science news, a discussion of how to develop innovative cosmetic ideas, and an interview with Kimberly Riley, a cosmetic chemist who has done something that many cosmetic chemists dream of doing. She started her own cosmetics line. But first, the news. There was an interesting article about sun exposure attitudes published in the May issue of the journal Archives of Dermatology. According to researchers, telling young women about the risks of skin cancer is not the best way to get them to cut back on their tanning time. No, the best way is to tell them that it will lead to wrinkled, leathery-looking skin as they get older. It seems concerns about appearance are more impactful than those about health. So researchers did a study on women considered to be pathological tanners. These are regulars at indoor tanning booths who visited up to 4 times a week. When they told these women about the effects on their skin, there was a 35% drop in indoor tanning visits. Another interesting thing I learned from the study is that there is a psychological condition called dysmorphia. People with this condition strongly dislike the natural color of their skin. So they just really don't like the pale look, and this is one of the reasons that they are compelled to go tanning. Researchers were most surprised that even people who had dysmorphia were convinced by the focus on how indoor tanning would affect their appearance later in life. This seems strange because you would think that the immediate look of their skin would be more important to them, but it turns out they don't want leathery, wrinkled skin either. Now, it will be interesting to see if sunscreen marketers pick up on these new findings. Wouldn't it make sense to start focusing advertising more on sunscreens as wrinkle prevention products? I know most anti-aging products already include a UV, but they really don't play up the fact that UV will prevent wrinkles, and there's plenty of studies which show it will. I wonder how many consumers realize how much older sun exposure makes people look. I mean, a 30-year-old from Florida or Arizona just looks much older than a 30-year-old from Minnesota, and it's really just because of the sun exposure. Now, I doubt the desire to have tan-looking skin will go away anytime soon, so as a cosmetic chemist, this story demonstrates that there will be a growing need for good sunless tanners. The best sunless tanners haven't been invented yet, so if you're looking for some innovative product development ideas, sunless tanning is an excellent place to start. In keeping with our sun exposure theme, I'm reminded of a debate I saw at the recent mid-year SCC meeting in Long Island about vitamin D in cosmetics. See, exposure to sunlight is known to stimulate the production of vitamin D in the body. Actually, one of the tactics of the tanning bed industry is to say that vitamin D deficiency is one good reason to use tanning beds. It is difficult to get vitamin D in your diet if you're not specifically doing that. Of course, most dermatologists disagree that tanning beds are a good way to get that vitamin D. They point out that UV exposure is a known carcinogen, and just because it could help you with vitamin D doesn't mean you should expose yourself to that carcinogen, especially when there is alternatives. Anyway, in the cosmetic field, there is some controversy over whether vitamin D should be added to skin products, and whether it even does anything when put in there. According to industry regulatory expert David Steinberg, vitamin D is prohibited in many countries. So I guess you have to know who you're selling the product to if you're thinking of adding vitamin D to your formulations. Dr. Zoe Draolis also commented on vitamin D during the SCC seminar. She talked about ingested vitamin D and also implied that sunscreens might be inhibiting the body's natural ability to make enough vitamin D. I even heard an interview with one dermatologist on NPR who suggested unprotected exposure to sun might be a good thing. Of course, again, the vast majority of dermatologists disagree with this idea. As far as topically applied vitamin D goes, an article published in the October 2009 CNT magazine entitled Metabolism of Vitamin D in Skin, Benefits for Skincare Application, this article concluded that putting a precursor of vitamin D in a formula could have beneficial effects of vitamin D, like UV protection and enhanced barrier function. It seems to me, however, if a product actually had metabolic effects, it would no longer be a cosmetic and would fall under a drug classification. At least that would be the case here in the U.S. Vitamin D remains a controversial subject, and much research into its effects is being done. I still remain skeptical of the inclusion of it in topical products, as it seems to be one of those ingredients that either doesn't work as it claims, or if it did work as claimed, would be considered a drug and we couldn't use it as cosmetic formulators. This seems to happen to a lot of cosmetic ingredients. Cosmetic science topic. How to develop new ideas for cosmetics. To advance in your cosmetic chemistry career, you have to come up with good, unique ideas. If all your company needed from you was color and fragrance changes to formulas, they could save a lot of money by hiring technicians rather than the formulating chemists. Chemists who can come up with and implement ideas are the ones who will be most valued to any company. So you should do what you can to come up with really great ideas, or at least come up with some ideas. Some ideas are better than none. Of course, coming up with and implementing ideas was not a subject you're likely to have learned in any college science course. Some people seem born with the ability to generate ideas, and maybe they were. But generating new, unique ideas is something that everyone can do. You just need to use some proven brainstorming tools. One of these tools is the SCAMPER technique. That's S-C-A-M-P-E-R. That's an acronym for Substitute, Combine, Adapt, Modify, Put to Other Purposes, Eliminate, and Rearrange. Let's look at what SCAMPER is and how you might use it. SCAMPER uses a set of directed questions to come up with new product slash process ideas. While we'll go through an example of generating new product ideas, the SCAMPER technique could be used for any challenge or problem that you face. Some of the categories in SCAMPER won't exactly fit what you're doing, but you'll just have to adapt it to your needs. To start this process, you need to get a pen and paper so you can start writing down your ideas. Using a computer is fine, but I've found actually writing things tends to improve the ideas I generate. Now let's look at it as a cosmetic formula. Suppose you are working on body wash formulations. Here's how you might use the SCAMPER technique to come up with new ideas. First one is substitute. Now substitute means thinking about your product and trying to make substitutions to come up with some other type of product. Ask yourself a question like, what can I substitute to change the product? For a formula like body wash, you might try substituting ingredients like the primary and secondary surfactants. The key is to not think critically about your ideas. Forget what you know and try any idea you can come up with. Could you make a body wash by substituting the water for alcohol? Maybe. At this point, don't worry about whether it's a good idea or not. Volume is better than quality. Next part of SCAMPER is combine. The idea behind combining is that you take multiple aspects of your product and combine them. This is the kind of thinking that led to multifunctional products like 2-in-1 shampoos. For example, could you combine a skin lotion and body wash to make a 2-in-1 body wash? How about combining the body wash with a poof to create a foaming washcloth? You could even create a body wash that does everything from washing, conditioning, to prepping your skin for shaving. Adapt. Adapt means thinking about some aspect of the product and adapting it for some other purpose. For example, could you find a surfactant for your body wash that also doubles as a fragrance or a colorant or preservative? Modify. Modify means changing or distorting the product in some way to come up with something different. Ask yourself a question like, what would happen if I exaggerated a feature of the product? So for a body wash, You might try to make it small and concentrated, or really big and diluted. Could you have a body wash where the consumer puts a single drop on their poof and it cleans the entire body? Put to other purposes. This concept refers to using your product for another purpose. For example, you have a body wash already. Could you sell the same formula to pet owners to wash their animals? Could the body wash be used to wash your hair, dishes, bathrooms, or maybe even your car? In fact, I use body wash on occasion to wash my car. It works quite well. Eliminate. When you think of eliminating things from your product, you can often come up with interesting new ideas. For example, ask, what would the product look like if I remove some component? In the body wash example, what kind of product would you get if you remove the water? How about removing the surfactant, or 80% of the surfactant? Or removing the foam? By eliminating ingredients or characteristics, you might come up with a completely new and interesting product. Finally, rearrange. This part of the exercise asks what happens if your product is designed to do the reverse of what it normally does. So, could you make a body wash that deposits things on the skin rather than removing them? Could you use a cationic surfactant instead of an anionic surfactant? What can you rearrange or reverse about your product, and how would that lead to a new product? So give yourself an idea quota. Your success in your career will be directly related to the number of independent ideas you generate and implement. If you can create more unique ideas, you will likely be more likely to make them happen, and this will be great for your career. I suggest you spend at least 10 minutes a day coming up with new ideas. Really challenge yourself to come up with at least 50 new ideas a week. Write them down and review them once a month to determine which you would like to pursue. You should always be pursuing some independent idea. We're all born with the ability to come up with new and unique ideas. So frequently exercise your mind by generating ideas so you don't lose this skill. Doing so will certainly help your chemist's career, and it will also help you come up with some really cool product. And really, that's what being a cosmetic chemist is all about, coming up with really cool products. Beep. Today's interview is with a cosmetic chemist who decided to take a different route to break into the cosmetic industry. Rather than starting out in the traditional manner of getting a formulating job, she learned what she needed to know about cosmetics and jumped right in to launch her own company. Kimberly Riley is the owner and operator of FSL Cosmetics. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Beep. Thanks, Kimberly. All right, that brings us to the final segment of our show, our brain challenge. Since we're still experimenting with this segment, I came up with a different type of challenge than has been asked before. I'll provide an answer next episode. Here's today's challenge. According to the data collecting company Euromonitor, in 2008, the overall world cosmetic market was $333.6 billion, and that's US dollars. Which of the following market category was the biggest seller? Was it oral products, things like toothpaste and mouthwash, fragrances, skincare, hair care, and color cosmetics? If you know the answer, go to the Contact Us tab on chemistcorner.com and send us your answer. We'll read the name of the first person to correctly answer it in next week's podcast. Well, that's all for our show today. We'll be back next week with another show and interview. Just a few quick announcements. I'm officially on the ballot for the position of Vice President-elect for the Society of Cosmetic Chemists. So if you are an SCC member, a vote for Perry Romanowski would be greatly appreciated. My co-host Kelly Dobos is also on the ballot for the position of Area 2 Director, so if you are able to vote for her, I know it'd also be appreciated. I'll be speaking at the Intermountain West SCC meeting on Monday, August 23rd, so if you're in the area, please attend. The talk is on how cosmetic chemists can use the internet to be more productive. Finally, if you have any questions and comments about cosmetic science or the show, go to chemistcorner.com and leave your feedback there. Also, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and connect with us both on LinkedIn. Just look at the About page on Chemist Corner for more details. All right, thanks for tuning into the show, everybody. Now, go make a difference.